Well, Sika, welcome to Money Bites.
Yeah, thanks so much, Minky, for having me.
Awesome. So our resident intro question, could you give us a quick one-liner about yourself in a trivia that people don't know about you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm actually working as a machine learning architect over at Snowflake at the moment. Prior to that, I spent about 6 to 6.5 years working in various data science and machine learning roles across different companies, different industries. So yeah, I really, really have quite a diverse sort of background here. A little piece of trivia. So on the side, I'm really passionate about art. So I actually do have a website with my art portfolio and trying to market it a little bit more and trying to do t-shirt designs and take commissions and things like that. So it's called whiteflame.art, actually.
Whiteflame.art. We'll yes. Definitely look it up. That's awesome.
Yep, thanks.
Also, given that Winnie is a platform for women in tech and allies coming together to improve our financial literacy, our third resident question is, what's your first memory of money?
Yeah, good question. So I went to grad school at Carnegie Mellon, and part of our responsibility, I guess, in the grad program was to TA class. But as a part of doing that, we were given a stipend, which we could spend on anything. And I ended up spending that on like my rent and my food. And it was kind of the first real sort of like paycheck that I got. And so it was the first time I felt like I had a lot of freedom to kind of figure out how I want to use this money. And so I tried to be really practical about it.
Did it run out faster than you expected or just about right?
No, it actually covered my rent and my food really well, that I did have like leftover money as well. So it worked out pretty well for me.
Nice, nice. Well, you went to college and grad school for statistics. I wanted to start off there.
Yeah.
Were you always really enthusiastic about math? Why statistics?
Yeah, I think I was always enthusiastic about math. It was one of those subjects that just sort of made sense compared to science or like English and literature. It was just really easy to pick up and was very logical in nature, which aligned really well with like my thought process. Statistics came sort of like later on. I always struggled with probability because it was one of those where it wasn't as logical or as deterministic as some of the other math subjects. So that came later on when I was considering like different engineering major choices that I had. And I wanted to pick one that was very math focused. And so after doing research, I learned about industrial engineering, and that was a lot heavier on the math side, but also heavy on like the probability and stat side. So that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to try this out because it is still like heavy math and I'd rather do that than some of the other very science heavy engineering majors. And so that's when I took my first stats and probability classes. And then I think throughout those classes, I gained more of a sense of like how to work out these sort of like puzzles. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and that kind of led me into like the data science path.
So you entered data science. Do you think looking back with all the tools that are coming up, et cetera, that people who are interested in entering data science needs to be very proficient in math still? Is that sort of a core skill set?
Yeah, it's definitely a core skill set because I think more than like the rules that you're applying or like the nitty gritty of the math subject area, it's more of teaching you problem solving. Mm-hmm. So like how to take apart a problem, figure out what steps are needed in order to get to the solution. That sort of mindset, I think, is built as you take those like math courses and build up that skill set.
Super interesting. So with your education, you entered the data science world. I have not seen someone's life in career trajectory graph that is as stepped up and to the right in such a predictive way.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start there as well before we even go into the specifics of your career.
Yeah.
You mentioned something that I thought was interesting. You said that your life satisfaction was so enmeshed with your career satisfaction that we should just use the same graph.
Yeah.
Could you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, I think as like, I guess just like growing up, I was always like very academic, very like focused on making sure I got the right grades and that I was trying to learn or go in depth into what I was learning and really try to understand why something works the way it is, or like why, you know, just knowing as much as I can about a subject area. So I think that's always just like been my personality, to be like very academic, very focused on like starting and building that career. And so I think that just because my personality is that way, it makes sense to me that like career and like building that foundation of academia and then going into career and then also excelling in that way and also being like very focused, doing a lot of hard work in your job and trying to progress and things like that, just made sense that that is what it means to be successful. And yeah, that just ties in with my personality because I'm like ambitious in that way. So it's just something that is hard for me to kind of disassociate like career success with like, oh, my life is successful. It's sort of like intertwined for me just through my personality, I think.
Do you feel then that the success, recognition, promotions, or not getting promotions, sort of the effect from your career has an outsized effect on your life?
Yeah, definitely. I think if like things are not going well at work, it sort of creeps into the rest of my life as well, where it feels like I have to excel in work to feel like happy about where I'm at currently. And then I'll be like happier about like other things that I do, like my hobbies or cooking or like exercising and things like that. So it's like, it's very hard to find happiness from something outside of work that like feeds into work. It's always like the opposite way. Like if something's not going well at work, chances are I'm not going to have a good time outside of work either, because I'm just like thinking or just like not feeling motivated outside.
To a certain extent, I can empathize as someone who has a day job and also working on my startup simultaneously. Yeah. It consumes me at times. But I've also been trying to figure out how to find a balance and if balance is even needed. So a question that I have that is, where does your art fit into all of this?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I am trying to find that balance myself. Like I'm trying to disassociate my self-worth away like from my career and not make career like the center of my satisfaction, but rather try to build that system where you can still get happiness from other things and not feel like one of those like pieces that make you happy. If one of them is not making you happy, it's okay, and you know that something else is making you happy at like the certain point in time. So far, I've been like trying to figure out the right balance with like my art side hobby. I think last year I had more success with it. Like I just felt like I had more time. It was just I just had to work, and then work was a little bit slower at the time. So I felt like I had the mind space to focus on my art and like set up the website and then start practicing and creating things. But this year it's been really tough because earlier this year I had to do wedding planning and then find houses and like recently moved to a new house as well. And so with all these other things going on along with work, it became really hard to work on my art. And I haven't really had a lot of time to get back into working on my art. But that's something that I'm trying to get back into now that some things have died down, like, you know, the wedding planning's over, moved into the house. There are like other things associated with moving into a house, like setting up your house, buying things, so on and so forth. But I think at the end of the day, it's like, it's prioritization, right? So you just have to like mentally figure out like that, hey, I'm going to prioritize doing my art today, after work or in the morning, or, you know, whatever time makes sense. If it's even for like 15, 20 minutes, let me like do it. So once I get into the habit, it becomes easier and easier to be consistent about it. And I think that's what there's that popular book about building habits. And it's like, oh, do this one thing for like a few minutes, and then over time you'll build it up and be doing it for an hour. So it's really like taking baby steps towards getting there. But yeah, I'm also trying to get there and like trying to build that balance, especially when like a lot of unexpected things happen. How can I still keep that balance?
That's a really good experience that you're sharing. And you've also experienced a lot of unexpectedness during your career as well. So the first half of your career, it seems there were instances when, shall I say, your actual experience didn't quite meet your expectations.
Yeah.
So a few instances you shared was when manager or the experience with your manager wasn't quite what you had expected, or if a role or the product that you were working on was not business revenue directly linked. So your experience working on that project was not expected. Or the third one was when the job itself was completely different from the JD.
Yeah.
With all of these hiccups, looking back, what was your learning?
Yeah, I definitely learned something different in all these different experiences that I had. Whether it's about, you know, when you are going through an interview process, it's also up to you to interview the company. So make sure to like really interview like your future manager, your future team, and try to understand sort of like what they value in the company, what their vision is for the team, right? And try to, as best as you can, right, figure out sort of what their personality is. Do you think you'll gel well with them, with the culture of the team or the company? And try to be very pointed in your questions about the role. So rather than asking like very broad question, you know, be very specific of like, okay, what am I going to do in the first 30 days? And how are you going to help me make sure I'm progressing through them? In a year's time, you know, what does that look like? Or like in 3 years' time, just trying to figure out whether what you're going to be working on is what you expect going in. And are you does your manager sort of, does he have enough experience? Does he know what he's doing? Or does she know what she's doing? Right. Just try to gain that sense as much as possible during the interview process, I think is helpful. But I think you will always find out more like when you first join the company and start the role, right? Like you will figure out things as you go along, and maybe, you know, what was told in the interview may still be like completely different from what your experience is at the company. But part of it is also, I think a lot of the times, the companies that I joined, like they were like high growing companies. So they were like hiring a lot, right? So just also like thinking about like what stage is the company at also sort of like helps, because when you're joining all these like really high growing, like smaller startups or smaller companies, there's a lot of excitement. People are kind of like hiring quickly and not really like sitting down and thinking about what is the goal for this team or what is the goal for this company moving forward. So you kind of know that you're going to be joining in this territory where there is a lot of ambiguity. So just keeping that in mind.
For sure.
Or, yeah.
I'd love to jump on what you just said in terms of high growth. Do you have a particular way on finding new opportunities? And is company stage like a certain series if you're looking at startups, for example, is that part of your filter criteria?
Yeah, so I normally I'll like look on LinkedIn and see what jobs are being posted. I try to stay around like small to mid-sized companies, or like big tech. So I haven't really, or I never really looked too deep into startups, just because it always felt very high risk to me, and I still wanted a little bit more stability. So I'll look at like smaller to mid-size tech companies.
How do you search for that?
Yeah, so on LinkedIn, I'll just like I think I have like a weekly like email blast, and like I will just like type in like data scientist or machine learning, and then pick sort of like the area, whether it's like remote or like the city that I'm interested in. And I think daily or like weekly, I'll get like updates on like here's a list of jobs, and then I'll go through and just read the job description, see if it makes sense. It doesn't hurt to apply to as many as you can, even if it's like maybe not the perfect role, but like you never know, the job description doesn't always align with what a recruiter will tell you or what the hiring manager will tell you.
Right.
So,
But how do you also search for that particular company size, that it's small, mid, and it's not too early stage?
I think there are like some filtering criteria on LinkedIn, but also you can just like Google the company. I think sometimes certain companies will be on like Crunchbase or something if they're like private. So just doing a little bit of research around the company outside of LinkedIn as well is helpful.
Are you looking for a particular size above certain number of employees or certain level of funding?
I guess I wasn't looking like that specific, but I guess there are like little tiers, maybe like 500 to 1,000, or like 2,000 to 5,000, or something like that, right? So maybe I will like consider like broad ranges, but didn't think like too much into just like the
Fair.
nitty-gritty of like the company size that way. But also just looking at like the data science or machine learning maturity, like oftentimes the job description, they'll say something like, oh, looking for like the first data scientist to come in and build this team out, or looking for this data scientist to join like our quick growing data science team. I think there's like little clues there about like, is this like very early stage data science team that's hiring, or is this kind of maturing? Like, you know, they at least have like their data in a good place. Now they're like ready for data science and machine learning applications. So I was looking a little bit more around the range of like, hey, our data's in a good place. We're ready for data science and machine learning applications, or at least we're going to be quickly get our data set up, and data engineers are going to handle that, and then you'll get a chance to build out those data science and machine learning solutions.
Well, with all those filters, you joined BuzzFeed, which seemed a bit more mature, and it also gave you the opportunity to switch from a more traditional data science statistics to machine learning. How was that experience in terms of, could we start off with what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of differences there. One, so you could be a data scientist who is doing more statistical analyses, as you mentioned. So maybe you're just like doing a lot of like regression modeling, or you're doing a lot of like pulling a lot of descriptive stats, or like building out dashboards. Basically, thinking a little bit more along the lines of, you know, do I have the right sample size? Am I, you know, correctly interpreting my results? Like, is this representative of like the entire like user base or client base that I have? Does it make sense? So you're thinking very in like the now, and just kind of getting a lay of the land of like, hey, how is my business performing right now? Or how's my what does my user base look like right now? As you go more and more into like the predictive side, I think that's when you're relying more and more on machine learning. And so that's when but then you're also going a step beyond like basic regression, which may not be like the right model to fit a lot of like more complex relationships within your data. So then you'll like progress into using more like non-statistical type of machine learning models. When you get into like random forests, like tree-based, and then neural networks, and then you go into deep learning, it's getting, you're being able to do deeper and deeper things with your data. And so I guess I would say that's kind of like the difference. And oftentimes when you're a data scientist, you might be doing more product data science, especially at bigger tech companies, where you're doing a lot of like A/B testing, maybe building dashboards or generating quick insights from the data. Versus machine learning at bigger tech companies is like building recommendation systems or doing some sort of computer vision analysis or even developing new algorithms. That's kind of the difference that I've experienced and kind of been in both roles as well.
Did you have to do additional training or learning to transition?
I think I did a lot of on-the-job learning. So at BuzzFeed, I was given a lot of freedom to build my own recommendation system. And that was very new to me, but I was given the freedom to do the research, figure out how to get started, what are all the different algorithms in this space, and then build out my prototype. So just having gotten that freedom through work, I just kind of like learned on the job, like just dedicated myself because it was an interesting area. And then the best thing to do is when you actually build something, that's when you learn the most. I think most of the time I just like learn on the job, I would say, more than what I learned at school. I think school built that like problem solving skill. Mm-hmm. And then now that I have that skill, I can go and learn a bunch of different new things on the job outside of work. That's how I think my academics has translated into my life.
Love it. What would you give as an advice for someone who is trying to make that transition? So someone who has a data science background but wants to get closer to machine learning.
Yeah. Again, try to be able to, you know, focus on building something. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy. It could just be following a blog post someone's written or following a course. But I think when you get hands-on, so trying to spend that time, maybe even if you get the opportunity to do that at work, that's great. Maybe you can like find that opportunity for yourself at work too, if you talk to your manager and see, you know, whether you could do a side project or something like that. But yeah, as much as you can, try to build something that you're interested in developing. So maybe you're interested in recommendation system and you don't know, and you've never sort of done it before. There's tons of resources online, blog posts, Medium articles that will walk you through. So maybe first you'll walk through what someone's already built and then try to apply that to a new problem space. So yeah, just I think learn by doing.
Are there any resources that were particularly helpful to you?
Yeah, there was a couple of like data camp courses. So at my job, I had access to data camp. But I think you can also sign up or ask your companies to try to support you on that. Because I think there's like a free trial period, but then it is like a paid product. So that was helpful. And then Google Crash Course has a few different, it's basically like a crash course on machine learning and some deeper topics like recommendation system and deep learning as well. That was a good like sort of like intro to recommendation systems for me. And so I found that to be very helpful. And then just finding research papers. They are hard to digest and hard to go through, but I think as you keep sort of like reading it, you'll build sort of a way to kind of digest those papers better. Because there's like a lot of jargon and a lot of like math in them, but that's also a great way, just doing kind of a survey of like research papers in the algorithm that you're interested in.
That's super interesting. This was also the time though when after a while, you've already been working for a while, where your net worth gave a huge spike. Your previous roles, though, were also with brand recognized names. What was the difference here? How did you jump?
Yeah. Again, it's the opportunities that I was given. So prior to this, I was probably got to work. I did get to work on a lot of interesting things, but they were smaller in scope, right? And then I basically just had to develop something, a small piece of it, and maybe just like a do a quick build a quick model, and then there wasn't anything where I got to do like and like build something end to end from ideation to research to prototyping to then productionization. And so when I got kind of the biggest opportunities, I think, when I was at BuzzFeed to be able to build this whole like end to end data application or like machine learning application. And so that's when I felt like I just learned so much from the ideation part, right? Like figuring out what metrics are important to the business. And then making sure that the solution is going to drive that business value. And then learning a lot of like machine learning engineering. So how do you now productionize and deploy your model? How do you connect with UX engineers and get it injected into the app? So there were just like a lot of things I learned that I had never learned before. And I got to do that all with this like one big project. And it also, and because of the success of that project, I was able to also like get promoted, get a chance to start managing a team, and also kind of changing the alignment of our team as well. So we started focusing more on recommendation system through this initial work that I did. So I think just because of the opportunities and things kind of fell into the right place, and then it helped my career progress. It just gave me that huge career jump, I would say.
I feel like you're underselling yourself. It sounds like you proactively found a opportunity that you were interested in. You proactively figured out how to do it, and then through it, you were given more scope, a bigger team. And it sounds like through promotions, it led you to an increase in net worth.
I think it was a combination of like the manager sort of giving a direction, assigning me to this product area, and then allowing me to work with the product, the PM on that team, and then the PM and me sort of like brainstorming together on ideas, and then me sort of then figuring out what approach to take, with some guidance from my manager of like, just how to just kind of giving me feedback. So I would say it's definitely like it was definitely like a group focus, like a group effort there. But because I was really, I think it was a really interesting space and I felt very motivated. It did help me, I guess it did help me bring some structure into the ambiguity that was this problem that I was given to work on. And then I just kind of put on my research hat and then just sort of like figured out things along the way.
That's super amazing. Are there any particular up and rising topics in machine learning that is interesting to you now?
Yeah, I've been trying to get more and more up to speed on like generative AI, especially as it applies to art, just because this is like the one area that kind of marries my interest in art as well as machine learning and AI. So trying to find some time to understand, how generative art works, playing around with things like DALL-E and seeing kind of what the performance looks like, but also thinking from like an ethical standpoint, right? Of has like we know that this has been trained on a lot of copyright images, like what sorts of implications does it have? So yeah, just trying to kind of understand that space a bit more right now. I know there's a lot of hype around like LLMs and Gen AI in general. But I think the core of it is always still someone has to figure out how it's going to drive business value, and then it's and only then is it useful to a company. So I think it's still important to build that muscle of figuring out, okay, what is important to the business? What type of, do we really need to, like, an LLM application here, or can, like, a simple like a traditional machine learning model work here? So yeah, I think it's always good to kind of come back to basics here and, like, not get too stuck in the hype cycle of, like, here's the next cool, like, state-of-the-art algorithm, but rather come back and really think through what is going to be driving business value, or what is going to be driving value for like us humans in general. So I think, yeah, those are the areas, I guess, like, that is, like, top of mind in this field right now.
That's super important. I do 100% agree with you that with the hype of Gen AI, everyone seems to be clamoring for it. But
yeah,
100% agree that you need a use case. Like, just throwing Gen AI at it,
I'm
not going to do anyone a favor.
Yeah.
If you're just curious, from a data science, machine learning, engineer's sort of perspective, is how you look at this different from just additional prompt engineering?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that the easiest and quickest way to get some value out of LLMs is through prompt engineering, because there's a lot of time and energy that you need to spend if you plan to fine tune a model or even, like, build out your own LLM, right? That's not easy to do. There are companies, like, that are being funded a lot to do that already. So it's much more worth your time to be spending on the prompt engineering side of things. And I think that can get you, like, very far just through prompt engineering alone. And it is like a whole different skill set to build, and then does require a lot more domain expertise. So I think I guess it's, like, trending more now towards the data, right? What kind of data do you feed into a model? What sort of domain expertise are you providing now to a very generic model?
I find this fascinating. I've heard somewhere that if the currency of wealth was oil in the 21st century, now it's going to be water and data.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I totally agree. This is data, and the ethical use of it is super important.
Yeah.
From there, you went on to a really big company, Twitter.
Yeah.
How was that experience going from that big tech culture? Was it very different? Was there a culture shock?
Yes. It was definitely quite different. Within Twitter, there are a lot more data science teams. So prior to that, I was always part of, like, there's one data science team. This is it. We kind of support, like, the whole org. And it kind of felt like I'm in the small sort of data science startup within a company. And then now there's, like, so many different data science teams. We're all kind of aligned to different product areas or different feature areas. And there is some collaboration among the teams, but really it's still, like, you're still, like, more working within the team and within the product that you support. So definitely felt different. Like, it was nice that there were so many different data science teams. There was a lot to learn from all the different teams, and you didn't necessarily have to be working on a certain project to learn from it, but you could, like, read other people's docs, you could grab some time with them, pick their brain. There was a lot of resources in that way. But at the same time, because there are so many of them, there's a lot more competition to be able to work on what you want to work on, right? So, and what you work on is probably a small piece of a bigger puzzle. So before I got to build my own recommendation system, here there's, like, 80 engineers supporting one recommendation system, and then there's, like, a few data scientists supporting that same recommendation system. So you only get to work on, like, one piece of that big system. So that was a shift, for sure. And then culture is just different just because there's like so many more data science teams now.
Definitely two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
We can't move on from Twitter without mentioning this man, Elon Musk.
Yeah.
What was the mood and how did you feel when you heard about, let's start from the rumors.
Yeah.
The rumors started that he might be taking over.
Yeah. Definitely very unexpected. Initially, I think I didn't know how to feel. I don't think like the rest of the team really knew like what to feel either. And we weren't sure whether is it a rumor? Is this actually happening? Like, what's going on? And there was, I think after that initial announcement, there was a few months of like nothing happening. And we were like, okay, maybe this is not really happening. It was just a rumor after all. And then all of a sudden the announcements came back and then we had Q&As with Elon and it was very confusing time and it definitely impacted like everyone in the company. The mood, people were very anxious, worried, especially those who were remote. They weren't sure if they would have to be called back to an office or what would happen. And just knowing sort of how he's led other companies, you know, we were worried, is our culture going to shift now and things like that. So definitely was very worrying times. I would say it was not easy to work during that time frame. We weren't even sure if we were going to continue to work on the same project because we weren't sure if our project's just going to completely get pivoted. So did it, like, should we be spending so much time right now on this one project? So there were a lot of just like questions and a lot of unknowns.
Was the message clear of an impending layoff once the acquisition announcement was made, or was it abrupt?
And that was also abrupt, but I think everyone sort of knew like there is going to be layoffs. Mm-hmm. I think we didn't know at what scale, when it was going to happen. And yeah, and like who it would impact, like are we on a like core team? We didn't really know. So that did happen very abruptly. And interestingly enough, it happened on my birthday.
Oh no.
So that was an interesting experience. And I was also in San Francisco that week because we were having a team meetup that was scheduled a few months ago, and then it happened to be during the layoff situation. So that was interesting. Yeah, but definitely abrupt for sure. I think there were a couple of interviews where he was like, "Oh no, layoffs. We're not gonna have like 80% layoffs going on," but then it was really 50%. So. Gotta take everything that is said with a grain of salt because you never know what is actually happening and what sort of decisions are being made at like the top level.
Yeah, having gone through a mass layoff experience at my day job as well. Just the anxiety leading up to the rumored date, and I have to say also I felt a lot of PTSD afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, it does not seem like it was a fun experience. Having learned all of that though, you now came to a new company, Snowflake.
Yeah.
Would love to hear, with all the lessons learned, what were you searching for in this
company? Yeah. I think this was one that sort of just fell on my lap or kind of just happened where I wasn't really like looking for it because this role is it is more of like a customer facing role, so it's less about it's quite different from just working as a data scientist or a machine learning engineer or a machine learning scientist at a company where you're working on a project, you do all of the hands-on work and coding work, and then all of that. So it's a shift from that because it is more customer facing. So you're actually working with a lot of customers and it's more like consulting in a way of, hey, how can you use Snowflake and the different machine learning features offered within Snowflake to build out your solution or migrate away from your existing infrastructure to our infrastructure. So it's a little bit more architect-y in that way. And you're doing less coding, and more of the coding that you are doing is on developing demos or content for customers or blog posts. But you do get to work You do get to work with a lot of different customers in a very short span of time across different industries. So you there's a lot more opportunities to learn than being stuck on maybe just like one project for a year, right, at a company. So a lot of that appealed to me. And initially, I wasn't sure because it is such a shift from my from all the roles that I've had so far. But I felt like, hey, let's try this thing out. Try something new, see if I like it. And so yeah, so I decided, you know, let's give it a shot. Maybe it's something that I will enjoy and progress into. So just try to keep an open mindset, and just try something new. I think there's never a time to not try something new. So I just wanted to see what this would be like.
I love it. Like I said in the beginning, I have not seen someone whose life and career satisfaction graph is so progressive, right? On a consistent basis. So I love it. I hope Snowflake is amazing experience for you and new adventures to come following. I will definitely check out your art webpage. And
Yes, thank you.
thanks for sharing your experience, Ika.
Yeah, thanks so much, Winky. Thanks for having me here. It was fun chatting.
Yay!